From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farm and Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. Happy Saturday. It is June 6th. On today's show, podcast host Karen Michelle brings us her latest episode of Ganja Granny. It's a new podcast on cannabis for older adults. This week, we unpack the naming and business behind the plant. As America prepares to celebrate its 250th anniversary, Indigenous leaders are calling for their stories to be included. I spoke with Andy Jacobs and Michelle Kelly Woodard of the Delaware Nation about reclaiming Lenape Indigenous history and traditions. Plus, Rosie Starr pops into the Narrowsburg Farmers Market. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report, but first, news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is in France marking the 82nd anniversary of D-Day. The observance honors the American and Allied troops who stormed the beaches of Normandy during World War II. Hegseth used the anniversary to highlight the importance of military alliances.
Today, as we face an increasingly complex threat environment, we apply the lessons from 82 years ago, learned on these beaches. Strong allies, each fully committed to doing their part, win wars. The men buried here fought in a warfighting alliance where every partner brought its full measure of industry, courage, and sacrifice.
Hegseth called for greater commitments from American allies, saying the sacrifices made on D-Day offer lessons for today's threats. The U.S. Treasury Department is warning banks to look out for red flags that could be connected to customers without legal status. It's part of the Trump administration's illegal immigration crackdown, but as NPR's Stephen Bisaha reports, the order and advisory are not as strict as what bank executives were worried about.
Multiple news outlets reported this year the Trump administration was drafting an executive order that would require banks collect citizenship data from new customers. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent told CNBC in May that he did support stricter rules. But the executive order doesn't add any new rules for banks. Instead, the advisory warns them to look out for customers with certain red flags. That includes individuals with a social security number that doesn't match records or a company that has a history of ICE violations. A bank customer in the U.S. does not need to be an American citizen to open an account. Stephen Bisaha, NPR News.
Prediction market companies are spending millions of dollars on influencers to promote the sites on social media. But as NPR's Bobby Allen reports, some of the creators are spreading misinformation about elections.
Polymarket and Kalshi are paying influencers up to $500 per post to spread the word about prediction markets, where people can bet on everything from the color of President Trump's tie to war to election outcomes. In recent weeks, some of those paid influencers have been spreading fabrications about the Los Angeles mayor's race, claiming without evidence that the process has been beset with fraud. After NPR pointed this out to Kalshi, the company asked influencers to take down posts. Polymarket never responded to requests for comment. Misinformation experts say it's a preview of what's to come ahead of the midterms. Fears also persist about the markets themselves, which can be manipulated by bad actors or bettors aligned with one candidate. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
This is NPR.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Jason Dole. The New York State Legislature passed a one-year moratorium on data centers Thursday night. The measure would pause permits for the facilities and require new rules on utilities, energy efficiency, and community benefits. Samuel King of the New York Public News Network has more.
Lawmakers say they're responding to concerns about data centers' impacts on the environment and utility rates. The legislation places a one-year hold on new large data center projects and requires an environmental impact study on data center development in the state. Assemblymember Dee Dee Barrett, a Hudson Valley Democrat, chairs the Chamber's Energy Committee.
Our constituents are talking about data centers. They are worried about data centers. They are confused about data centers, and they are looking for answers about data centers.
Groups held rallies at the Capitol calling for a hold on data centers. Cheryl Cordes traveled to Albany from the town of Alabama in Genesee County, where a major data center is planned.
And we don't want it.
Opponents, including some business groups and unions, say a moratorium would be bad for the economy and limits local control.
Thank you, Samuel King. The legislation is not law. It will be up to Governor Kathy Hochul to sign or veto it. The measure passed in the final hours before New York lawmakers left Albany for the year. What else happened in these last days of the legislative session, the only week of work for the New York legislature after the state budget passed? We'll find out Monday night at 6 on the local edition when my guest will be WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind, who covers Albany for the New York Public News Network. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, investing in creative thinkers and problem solvers who help people, communities, and the planet flourish. More information is available at hewlett.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Will-O-Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange, Sullivan, and Rockland, a publicly supported philanthropic institution. Information at CFOSRNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. Well, last month, we premiered a new podcast here on Radio Catskill. It's called Ganja Granny, and it's hosted by longtime former NPR correspondent Karen Michelle. And it's all about cannabis for older adults. Who grows the plant and where does it go? This episode, Karen unpacks the names and the business behind the plant. Here's episode 2.
Hey, I'm Karen Michelle. Welcome to episode 2 of my new podcast, Ganja Granny, where we'll be checking into all things ganja, cannabis, especially as it relates to the over 50s among us. On this episode, we'll name names, not in the political retributive sense, but those you'll see wherever cannabis is sold or consumed. In a future show, we'll get into ganja. What is it good for, especially as it relates to older folks? Especially when consuming, it can be easy to forget that cannabis is a business. This is Revelry, a cannabis trade fair with more than 100 mostly young vendors and lots more, not always so young buyers. There are managers, bud tenders, owners, carrying sacks bulging with samples of the plethora of product.
My name is Mark.
How old are you?
37.
Your parents smoke?
My parents don't. I do.
I told some of them about Ganja Granny.
My name is Nick.
How old are you?
I'm 34.
Do your parents consume?
They do not, actually. They do not. My mom did back in the day, but she doesn't really anymore, and my dad is straight as an arrow. He can't hang. He cannot hang.
My name's Lindsay.
Do you have an audience if you
want to? Oh! For sure. I think that the cannabis industry has changed dramatically. Like, my mom's a consumer now, and she's 78. I'm 44. So it's definitely a different universe than it was growing up as a child of the 90s.
Geese. Yes, geese. Not at the appropriately named Revelry, but at Donna's Buds and Edibles Farm.
My name is Donna Nowak.
We're on a winding, bucolic road in the Hudson Valley of slightly upstate New York, less than an hour from my home in a community where houses tend to be closely spaced and the farmiest animal is a chicken. It's different here. This is a farm of animals both familiar and so very not. Take the emus.
This is Frickin' Frack. They are one of the original members of our farm. And we hatch them from eggs, and they are like dogs. They think they are dogs.
Donna holds out a plate of individually sliced green grapes. Yeah, the emu peck at them as they stick out their blue necks, ostrich-like bellies perched on backwards folding legs. sidling up to the fence a short distance away, there's a 3.5-ish-foot-tall humpbacked cow, rather bull. It's a zebu. This is kind of like being in a living cartoon.
Have you ever fed a zebu?
No, I have never fed. I've never seen a zebu, I think.
I think you must experience the joy of feeding a zebu.
It may.
Here you go, sweetie. No, that's my hand.
It's great with zebu.
This is Humpy.
Hey, Humpy. That other human voice is Roy. Roy is Donna's partner in wildlife, ganja, and life. They're both in their 60s.
Kind of like working the slot machine.
In that the beast will take however many treats you'll feed it, and also in a way, kind of like entering the cannabis industry, for it takes lots of seemingly endless attention, often for no returns. It's a risk, and it's its own kind of fun. Across the road is where the ganja is grown. Just past a standing stone with a bright green Zebu brand logo superimposed, horns framing the familiar serrated leaf plant. The Zebu label on the plastic tube holding the pre-roll, the joint in front of me, gives the name of the strain, the percentage of THC, the cannabinoid that is the psychoactive ingredient, the required government warning, contact info, some other stuff. But nowhere does it tell me what so many other packages do, whether it's sativa or indica, the division often seen and cited in stoner flicks, dispensaries, ads, and t-shirts.
How are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Jason.
Nice to meet you, Jason.
Nice to meet you.
Jason is our director of cultivation.
So what am I about to see, Jason?
Where would you like to start? We'll start from the beginning.
I figure that while gazing at the 400 young plants, Acapulco Gold, Scented Marker, and Gorilla Gas strains among them, we could start with that sativa indica division. Acapulco Gold is often thought of as a real sativa, while those others as evenly balanced hybrids. So do those divisions mean anything?
You know, from my understanding when I was young growing up, you know, sativa was more of the energy, uplifting, and indica is going to put you on the couch. And now with modern breeding over the past 20 years, you know, I feel that everything is a hybrid. There is no more, you know, yeah, people will say their strains are indica leaning or sativa leaning, but, you know, how it affects me and it affects you or affects Donna, we're going to have different effects.
So an effect?
And you're saying it's all basically bogus.
I mean, I wouldn't say bogus, but I would say, you know, they're all hybrids to a point. All your children are different. The same thing from a plant. So when you pop 10 seeds, you're going to get 10 very different plants. You know, some might be the same, but...
But this room is going into flower day one on Monday.
Still, when you look at the plants, there is a visible difference. Some are evidently siblings.
Some people say that an indica leaf is wider and fatter, and a sativa leaf is thinner and...
It is true. You could tell a sativa immediately. Very hard. These are all hybrids. So it's very... You won't really see the difference in these. Like, this will be almost... You could tell the hybrid because it's long, kind of skinny, but not really. So you could see that she is a, you know, almost a 50-50.
A classic marijuana leaf.
Yes. It's beautiful to look at every day.
Other than that, there are about as many opinions regarding the distinction and reasons, including the geographic origins, that contribute to the differences, as there are strains. Whatever you call them, the plants are destined for dispensaries. Root, that's ROT9 dispensary among them. It's along a major thoroughfare, as in actual Route 9, in the town of Wappingers Falls, less than an hour from the farm.
Hi, my name is Claudia Caniglio. I'm an assistant manager here at Route 9 Dispensary.
In the center of the dispensary are stands with rows of flower, more than 100 different strains, in jars for customers to see and smell. The Bud Bar.
The Zebu is right here. They have purple punch and soap. And jelly donuts. Smells like heaven. Nice big bud.
We have a little placard in front of each one of the strains that explains if it's a sativa or a hybrid, what the percentage of the cannabis is, what the price is with tax on that, and which terpenes exist in the strain.
Terpenes, though sometimes skunky or fruity or trees of spring odors, they are key to how most, not all people feel as effects.
Terpenes are the essential oil that gives the plant its smell, so your nose knows.
Jennifer Sandoval, who's in her 20s, is the education coordinator for Realm of Caring, an organization that counsels mostly seniors about the potential uses of cannabis in their lives. There are more than 150 terpenes frequently found in the plant.
We'll talk about mycine. This is cloves, typically for sleep. Limonene, citrus, typically for mood. Linalool is like a lavender scent. People tend to use that for stress. And then we have beta-carophyllene, is a pepper scent, and people typically use that for like joint pain. And then we have pinene, it's a pine scent, and typically people use that for focus.
Here's where we really get into the science. What is it in the ganja plant that causes the variety of effects? It's a relationship between us and cannabis, and has been for thousands of years. It's not called weed for nothing. Dr. Kenneth Weinberg, aka Dr. Cannabis, has focused on working with cannabis and older folks for more than a decade.
We didn't know until the 90s that there was comparable to the endorphin system, that there was an endocannabinoid system in the brain and the body. We didn't know until right after that that we actually made our own endocannabinoids, the structures that are very similar to the cannabinoids, the phytocannabinoids in the plant. I think the more we learn, the more importance we all give to it.
Faculty at or formerly at the University of Iowa among them, professor and pharmacist Dr. Gary Milovitz is part of that crew.
Our bodies produce a molecule, if you will, naturally in the body that's called anandamide, and it is a chemical or molecule that goes to the endocannabinoid receptors, and there are two different types of receptors. They're just called CB1 and CB2. And what we've learned is that tetrahydrocannabinol and the other cannabinoids from the plant also fit into these receptors. And some are a bit more powerful. Some of them stick around a little bit longer.
And inevitably, even longer in older people. Gary is in his 60s, Ken in his 70s.
Just like all other systems, it starts to deteriorate as we get older. And this is a system of a variety of chemicals that go between neurons. They all are altered as we get older.
That's why people, I think more older people are using it these days.
Because is that anecdotal mostly?
No, actually, it's interesting because I went online and I started looking at a number of studies that are being done, looking at these exact things, at the endocannabinoids, at the enzymes that make them and break them down, and how they definitely deteriorate as people get older. And then they looked at levels of the endocannabinoids after ingestion and saw that they were going back into a normal range. It's homeostasis.
Ultimately and intimately, balance. Feeling like yourself. Homeostasis. For some people, that means getting high. For others, it means feeling better. Pain manageable, sleep happening, good sensations, safe sex heightened, symptoms of depression lessened, nausea less nauseating. Here's where cannabinoids other than THC come in. You've probably heard of products, especially edibles, with initials like CBD, CBG, CDN, easily found at gas stations and online, and in legal dispensaries too, like this one among the tie-dye and tchotchke shops on a busy street.
Hi, I'm Courtney Beaupre. I'm co-owner of Herbal Woodstock, and we are here at Herbal Woodstock in Woodstock, New York.
And what do we have here?
So the way that our dispensary is set up is that we have things based on effect, so how you would like to feel. So when customers first come in, we ask them, how would you like to feel? And sometimes people are taken aback because they're not sure yet.
Shelves display products by what they'll do to the consumer rather than what they're called or what form they're in. Edibles, smokables, topicals.
So what are these categories you have?
So these different categories, we have Relieve and Recover. That has a lot of products that have CBG and some other cannabinoid CBD and other things in it. Generally, a lot of hybrid products, but that is for kind of more relief and recover aspects. And then we have our Sleep and Relax. That has more CBN-based products as well as some indicas that can help people relax and or go to sleep. We have our Vibe and Connect, which we kind of like to call our catch-all because it has everything else. And it can be, like a party pack. It might be low-dose THC, high CBD.
It's called the entourage effect, where together the cannabinoids can be more effective than in isolation. Often it's THC with CBD, CBG, or CBN. And those effects, too, change as the body changes, with life, with age. We'll go there and other theirs in the next episode of the Ganja Granny podcast. We'll talk to more scientists and medical professionals about the beneficial effects of cannabis for a number of conditions for folks over 50, and the problems with some of the studies, many of them inevitably on animals.
Well, what's interesting is I was speaking with a dispensary owner, and she said the over 50 demographic that come in, if you look at why people are actually turning to cannabis, you have to consider when you're dealing or creating the product, who are you serving?
Various state offices of cannabis management, including New York's, require me to add this warning. For persons 21 and older, keep away from children and pets. If cannabis is accidentally consumed, contact the Poison Center. Let me add, don't do what you can't undo, including drive. It's your precious human body, and potentially others too, endocannabinoid systems and all. I look forward to sharing another session with you. We'll be on this journey together. What is it that you want to know? Tell me. Please contact ganjagrannypodcast@gmail.com. That's GANJAGRANNY podcast@gmail.com. Ganja Granny is co-produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Catskill. Bless them. Thanks to my mix engineer, Scott Mueller, editor Tom Cole, Ben Neal, inventor of the mutant trumpet, for his music, Ron English for additional music, Mike D'Antuono for the logo, and Bob Vai for support. This program was produced and written by me, Karen Michelle. Thanks for your ears. And if you're primed and so inclined, spread the news.
You can hear the episode over at wjffradio.org. Head over to podcasts under the shows tab, and you'll see Ganja Granny there. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, the latest Star Talk. Stay with us.
I'm Jeff. Join me Saturday at midnight for Electric Mountain. 2 hours of house, techno, indie dance, and more, plus sets by top local, New York City, and global guest DJs. From the underground to the highest peak, it's Electric Mountain, Saturday at midnight on Radio Catskill.
On last week's Wait, Wait!, Paula Poundstone was excited about the new trend of TV shows starring senior citizens.
Have you heard about a new one of those reality shows, Cops? But it's older cops and the criminals just get away.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for the show made for fun, vibrant young people like you with the debut of our new official judge and scorekeeper. That's this week's Wait, Wait! From NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Farm and Country here on Radio Catskill. I'm Kimberly Izar. Well, up next, you know what time it is. This week's Star Talk report from Keith Hubbard.
Farm and Country. I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. Venus and Jupiter will be in conjunction later this week. Look to the west after sunset to see the two planets close together on Tuesday. Venus, being the brighter planet, will probably be visible first. Then Jupiter will appear below Venus. The duo will be less than 2 degrees apart, about the width of an outstretched pinky finger. This is too far apart to fit in the field of view of a telescope, but it will fit within the field of view of binoculars. They will be visible until around 10 p.m. this week. Conjunctions of Venus and Jupiter occur every 13 months on average, but can be as little as 10 months apart or as long as 15 months apart. Last year, there was a conjunction of Venus and Jupiter in August, and in August of next year, there will be another conjunction. Venus and Jupiter look the same size in our sky, but if you saw them side by side, the large difference in size would be apparent. The diameter of Jupiter is more than 12 times that of Venus. There are two reasons why Venus looks much brighter than a larger planet. The first is that Venus is closer to Earth than Jupiter by about 450 million miles. The second is that the clouds on Venus reflect more light than the clouds on Jupiter. Venus reflects 70% of the sunlight that strikes it, whereas Jupiter only reflects 52%. Look in the west at sunset on Tuesday to see Venus and Jupiter in conjunction. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Thanks to Keith for that report. As America prepares to celebrate its 250th anniversary, Indigenous leaders are calling for their stories to be included. Andy Jacobs remembers visiting Sam's Point in Minnewaska State Park for the first time, where Lenape people lived for generations. She recalls it as an emotional moment as a Delaware Nations member. Lenape communities were native to what is now New York, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey before they were forcibly removed or displaced by war, colonization, and broken treaties. I spoke with Andy Jacobs from the Delaware Nation in Ontario, Canada, and Michelle Kelly Woodard from the Delaware Nation in Anadarko, Oklahoma. Both of them are members of a Lenape women's group focused on preserving and sharing Indigenous history and traditions.
I'm Andy Jacobs. I'm from Delaware Nation, Ontario, Canada. I've been part of this group since it started. We have the 5 federally recognized tribes, 2 in Oklahoma, 1 in Wisconsin, the 2 in Canada.
My name is Michelle Kelly Woodard. I am a part of Delaware Nation, Anadarko, Oklahoma. I am recently new to the organization. I met Andy and we went together to go visit Canada and some other areas. We went back to the homelands, and I just always been interested in going back to the homelands and reconnecting with our people. There's a lot of times where we don't have those capabilities to be able to reconnect. So anytime that we have opportunities to do that, I encourage everybody, all of our tribes, our sister tribes, to be able to be a part of that.
I'm curious for you, Andy, we can start with you. What drew you to specifically to learn more about your Indigenous history and the Lenape area that is now, you know, present day Hudson Valley in New York, also Pennsylvania, other parts of the Northeast?
I guess for me, I've been doing it, I'm going to say, almost 5 years. So took a couple trips, got learning to know the actual history. Because in Canada, like, we're taught out of books. We're not taught American history originally, like where we came from or things like that. So again, I always worked in education and being an educator, but what kind of educator if you don't know your own history and not knowing that? So like losing the culture and things like that, it's like a loss. So now getting back to this, it's like it's healing and it's more at peace. And so every time that I go do something, I'm learning something so I'm able to teach it. And not knowing the other the other tribes that we had. Like, we only knew the two in Canada, but not knowing anybody from them. And now that I've connected with them, it's just like this connection is there. So I just love this women's group and being able to stay connected with everybody. To me, it's finding that peace. It makes those pieces fit together, because not knowing it growing up, and those opportunities should be there for everybody. But a lot of people are scared to take those opportunities.
I grew up, my father was in the military, so we traveled a lot. We got to go to a lot of different communities and some different countries as well. But being younger and seeing maybe the depictions, even like in of Native Americans, the depictions of Native Americans, we see that at a young age, even with cartoons, you know, they picture us as a character, not really being real, that we're still alive, and seeing the stereotypic items, how they would view us. Well, not only are we seeing that, we're also portraying that to other people that see that, other children that are not Native, and they're getting those stereotypics in younger ages for these kids, and it's traveling all over the world, and we're seeing that. So that kind of has led me to want to change that, let them know that we are here. We're not those stereotypic characters that you see in cartoons or in movies. There's a lot of times in public, even in public schools here in the United States, you know, you get the information about presidents and what they've done, or, you know, non-Native people. You don't get who actually we are and then what we contributed. And even the Constitution is based on our own self-government. They took that and applied it, but then again, they still called us, they called us savages in there. So they didn't give credit where credit was due.
You talked about, you know, being a part of the Lenape Women's Group and how it's helped you connect to other sister tribes in other parts of the world. I'd love to just hear a little bit more about the work that you do within the Lenape Women's Group.
Okay, so yeah, so a lot of what our group does is like basically like land back. We go around to different parts of New York, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. So again, we're learning our history. A lot of knowledge comes from Justin Wexler, as Eddie too. We work alongside Eddie, but again, it wasn't the women's group. I just introduced them to the women's group. So we go around and, like, because we don't hold no spaces there, we go back to our homelands and we go do things. But some of the places that we have been, and we've never really went back to the same place, we're going to learn different things. We've planted trees. People have offered us spaces to come back there and do our things. We do ribbon skirts. We've done things like that. Get outside, look at where the plants are, have medicine people there that we're picking these things for our medicine and what they're doing. So they're teaching it. We've always been by the water. So we always have a day for an ocean trip. We go get the mopum so that we can make crafts, different things like that. Anything that we do, and trying to be able to get a space where we can come back to. That way we can come back to do our ceremonies, to do our things. Nori Point is another one that Chris Bowser, he's worked alongside of us. He lets us do fishing. Another story there. Last year, because our women's group go to Nori Point, but I'm trying to connect everybody and keep everybody connected. So at Nori Point last year, our women's group planted medicines for any Lenapes that are in the area that need our tobacco or cedar. And Tristan is from the Delaware tribe, Bartlesville, Oklahoma. And we had went there, so they had caught a big sturgeon. And because we're doing living history, so again, we're learning the history, but we didn't know this, and we didn't know this till after we had went back. But Tristan got to get in the boat, and there's a picture of him hanging on the sturgeon with a whole bunch of us in the background. And then he got to go on the boat, and he got to release it. We didn't find out till later that it's been over 100 years, even possibly 200 years, that a Lenape has touched a sturgeon out of the Hudson River. So that was very emotional for a lot of us.
And Andy, you describe this releasing of the sturgeon as this very emotional moment for the folks that were there. How else would you describe coming back to your homelands in New York and Pennsylvania? What words come to mind?
Powerful, because there's been places that I've been that have been like so powerful. We went to Sam's Point, one of our funders for Huguenot Street. He had told us about the Sam's Point, and he didn't know that we had an extra day, or he said he would have got a van together and took us out there, not knowing anything. And because we had a late plane on the Monday to catch, so there was three of us that had nothing to do. We found these stairs, and they're Lenape stairs. That's what they're named. We go up there, and it goes up the side of the mountain. So we get up there, and I'm like, wow. And I was like, and my legs were shaking. This is the first time ever being somewhere. My legs were shaking so bad that I had to just stand there and hang on the edge of the mountain. Those guys went to the edge, and they could see over. I'm not familiar with the whole story of Sam's Point, but that was one of our homelands.
And Michelle, what about you?
It's rewarding to be able to experience those things, to be able to go and harvest our medicines, to be able to plant our medicines. Also seeing some of our artifacts that haven't been seen before. I know some of the women's group were able to visit museums and see things that maybe that weren't also on display for the public, but that they were able to go back and to view some of those items. I think that's healing on itself, because, you know, centuries and centuries of things that are taken away from us, we're slowly starting to be able to be reintroduced back to those things and our ways, our medicines. It's a powerful, it's motivational to continue the movement for our women and our communities to learn about our old Lenape ways, but also encouraging us to see the future for us. Not only open those opportunities for more people to be a part of this.
Thank you both so much for sharing those reflections. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, America's 250th anniversary. In 2026, America is celebrating the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence signing. I'm curious, you know, when you hear about this national effort to focus on the 250th, what comes to mind, and how do you hope that America, with this celebration, centers Indigenous stories and perspectives?
My thoughts is because I was actually thinking about that this morning, because everybody's asking us and we're doing the things and celebrating the 250, but if you can tell, we're not. But the things is, for me, is like, say for you, you're asking us to share our story. So that's how we're being part of it. It's nice that that they're celebrating it with us, because I didn't grow up in America. I grew up in Canada. So like Canada Day, like July 1st, July 4th. I used to go watch the fireworks, take my grandkids to go watch the fireworks, took my kids. I like to go watch the fireworks, but it's not really a day of celebration for us, because that's, our land was taken away. So it still can be hurtful, I guess, to me, when I said, I was like, actually think about, I wasn't thinking about it for this. I was just thinking about it. But the nice thing is they're including us with our stories. And growing up, they never included us. They there's pretendians out there and stuff like that to portray to be us. But it's like, at least they're asking us to be a part of it.
All of our tribes and all of our nations are different. I think the inclusion part is important. I'm thankful that they're giving us that platform to be able to tell our stories and to tell our past and let them know that we still are here. But I think it is important to highlight that we are all different, all of our nations and all of our tribes.
Absolutely. I hear you. I think oftentimes when folks talk about Native people, it's often in this very monolithic perspective. And as you described, there is just so much diversity within that. So I really appreciate you sharing that. You know, before we sign off, are there any events that you want folks to know about, you know, on the Northeast that is coming up this summer?
The Huguenot Street, June 12th, did I say 12th and 13th? Because we do Living History, that we do it every year. So I've been there from the start. Michelle's first time going to be there. There will be dancing displayed like during the day. Last year, somebody went and did an interview on the radio for that. It's getting announced more, because people don't know about it, but every year we get more and more people coming. My favorite part is because I do the cooking demonstrations there alongside with some other ones. And we talk about ourselves, talk about the Lenape people, and then the Dutch people are on the other side. Yeah. So what I did, Diane, her name is, she does the cooking over on the Dutch side, what they did. And I do the cooking. So the first time I was out there, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go trade her some food because her food looks good. So just like the old ways when we traded. So I go over there. And I was like, I have this for you. She goes, okay. So now it's just the automatic thing both days. We go trade food and show whatever she makes. I'll bring it back and share it with them because we can't give food out. We can talk about it, but we have gotten gifts while we're there. Someone brought us a piece of leather. Someone brought us some meat to cook because we've cooked bear meat, elk, deer, like really old school ways. So that's the highlight. And then Diane wasn't there the one day. And I went and there was someone taking over because she had a different event. And then she goes, that's the highlight of her weekend. She wishes she was here. She ended up showing up, but we did it the next day. So we traded and it's just an awesome feeling because I'm looking forward to that. My living history, it's like another family. Like my women's group, it's like they're all my family. So it's like, I can't wait to get back to see them and us get together because we're always joking. We're always laughing. We're always teasing. And it's like the best part. So when in the wintertime you don't see anybody, you can't wait to get back and let's do this.
That Living History event is going to be on June 13th to 14th at the historic Huguenot Street in New Paltz. You can find more information at huguenotstreet.org. And Nadine, Michelle, thank you so much again for your time. And thank you again to Andy and Michelle for just such an insightful conversation. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we head to the Narrowsburg Farmers Market.
Sign up for Radio Catskills' free weekly newsletter. Get the latest local news, culture, and things to do in your inbox every Friday. Stay connected and informed with Radio Catskills' newsletter. Subscribe at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. The Narrowsburg Farmers Market is open now for the season up until late October. It's behind the Union Building on Erie Street. Farming Country's Rosie Starr stopped in to shop and spoke with some of the vendors and market manager Danielle Gable about the 2026 season.
For Farming Country and Radio Catskill, it's Rosie Starr in Narrowsburg. It's the beginning of the farm market season. So as spring merges into summer, it's something always good to look forward to. This particular farm market that I'm visiting today is in Narrowsburg. It's behind the Union. It's on Erie Street. And I'm with the market manager, Danielle Gable. We're inside the Union in the cafe there. We ducked out of the spring rain. Just taking a moment for some hot tea. And I wanted to ask her how things are going now for the season.
We're at the very beginning of the season, and we have an exciting lineup scheduled. So we'll go straight through every single Saturday through October 31st. So it's a nice long season. 10-1, rain or shine, as you know, the show must go on, as they say, and the vendors are out there. So we encourage people, you know, when the weather is not great, get out your rain jacket, your umbrella, and enjoy maybe a lesser crowd, right? There's still music playing, providing, you know, an experience. What we're most excited about is just to be open another year, to be able to serve the community and our visitors alike, farm fresh real food and artisan wares. It's pretty cool.
There's lots to like about this market. The location is beautiful. There's lots of space. There's lots of parking. It's located in Narrowsburg behind the Union. But also the vendor lineup is very impressive. Let's talk about what's new and exciting at this year's market.
You know, having vendors join us from year to year who are returning is always beautiful, but it is so nice to welcome new people. Roger, that bakery is new for us this year, as is like Illumia Skincare, Hermana Catering. So it's really a nice addition to what already is kind of happening, right, and has been happening. We also give the vendors an opportunity to do pop-ups. maybe they're not there every week and they're there once a month. If you go to the website, you can see all the dates that everybody's coming, you know, attending, not attending. It's really, I think, symbiotic in the sense that you can come to the market, you can pick up eggs, cheese, meat, vegetables, herbs, flowers, bread, baked goods, mushrooms, maybe a bottle of local spirits or, you know, hard cider, prepared food. You can really come shop the market and get pretty much everything that you need. And then we're in the town of Narrowsburg. So what do you do when you need your pantry staples? You can run into Catskills Curated. Maybe you pick up an olive oil and a vinegar. You can run down to Narrowsburg proper, pick up pantry staple, Pete's Market. So you really can come to town, park your car very conveniently right in the market space, come and grab a sandwich, grab something to eat, and make your table as local as you can make it. Go grab a cup of coffee. Go treat yourself to lunch in town. Make it an experience. Make it a little adventure.
It takes quite a bit of effort to gather all of this. What are the challenges? Do you start in January?
So we do pretty much start in January. Challenges become about commodity balance. For example, if you have five bakers who want to get into pretty much any farmer's market, not just this one, that can be a challenge because there is a maintaining of, you know, business that has to happen. So it's not always easy. There used to be a very strong drive of people creating food-focused businesses, and I don't see that anymore, to be completely honest with you. But what I do know is that the farmer's market, this farmer's market or any other farmer's market, quite honestly, it's so needed, and it's such an integral part of food security, food sovereignty, resilience in a community. You know, I think sometimes we take that for granted. I'm always excited when the farm markets open for the season. I take a great pride in being part of it and shopping at them.
You know what I find fun, too, is the complimentary music every week's event.
Our musicians are beautiful humans who have donated their time, talent, and service to the market. They're not paid. They are graciously actually given vegetables from Will-O-Wisp Organic Farm. He sponsors that part of it. You know, our musicians are looking to be part of community, to lend their voice to the fabric of what we're creating, local food, local music. Again, community coming together to produce a community atmosphere. The farmers market is a nonprofit, so it's got its own operational challenges, we could say. But what a gift to have these people stand up and say, yes, I want to be a part of this.
Over the last few years, you've added to the inspiration of the visitors by sampling food. Do you plan to do that this year?
Yes. So we, once again, were just awarded a grant thanks to Sullivan 180. And so we will put on food programming tastings this year. I have to tell you that I absolutely love when that happens because my motto is if I can make this outside, you can go home and make it in your kitchen. And people usually get a chuckle out of that because they go, oh, that's true. You've got no tools out here and you're cooking, right? It exposes people to food that they may not have otherwise tried because when you look at parsnips and you're like, I've never had a parsnip before. What am I going to do with that? But then I give you a little cup that has a parsnip salad in it and you taste it. Then all of a sudden you have now had an experience with that new to you food, right? And maybe that inspires you to go buy the parsnips from the farmer and so on and so forth. So I think food education, food tastings, it's really magnificent when the kids come and taste new to them foods and then mom, dad, caregivers get really excited because they're like, I would never be able to get my kid to eat something like this. And it's like, you know, we have to find different ways in.
Thank you for nourishing us with this opportunity to speak about the Narrowsburg vendor market and bringing it to our community.
Go support a farmer's market this season. It doesn't matter if it's Narrowsburg, Calicoon, Rock Hill, wherever you are in Sullivan County or even outside of Sullivan County, make a commitment to try it and then keep going back and invest your dollars into local food because it does matter every single Saturday through October 31st, 10 to 1, rain or shine.
We're back outside at the farmer's market in Narrowsburg under the tent, and we're lucky because it's a spring rain, but we're here, and so is all of the vendors and the farmers. I'll let them introduce themselves and tell us what they've got for this year.
Hi, I'm Bobby from Willow Wisp Organic Farm. We have a bunch of really fun spring vegetables. We have carrots, Jerusalem artichokes, some lettuces, rhubarb, radishes, whole bunch of things, a lot of herbs, and we're really excited to be here. We have somewhere between 40 and 50 different crops throughout the year, so check in and stay tuned for whatever's coming along.
What's special for you? What's your favorite vegetable?
My favorite vegetable is actually sage, the herb. I cook a lot with sage. It makes a really good butter sauce. It makes an excellent accent to a salad.
It's not a vegetable. It's a spice. It's an herb.
Woody herb. Woody herb.
Thank you.
Of course.
Hi, I'm Soraya with Soraya's Kitchen. I have a great selection of gourmet foods made with all natural ingredients from the local farm. All my vegetables, Heller's, all my meats, Hilly Acres, all my dairy, Stonges Farm. I have 90% of my ingredients sourced local and as much as organic as possible as well.
And I want to know from Eugene Thalman what's happening at Sprouting Dreams Farms.
I'm growing lots of microgreens.
What's your favorite microgreen?
I eat a lot of broccoli microgreens as well as sunflower microgreens, but by far my favorite thing to grow is holy basil. It's really great for making tea, and when consumed on a regular basis, it has an adaptogenic quality that levels out your brainwaves, thus keeping your mind more centered and a sense of calm throughout your day.
Making my way down the aisle over here, I see a new stand. It says Hermana Catering. Is that correct?
Yes, it's Hermana Catering. Hermana means sister in Spanish. And I'm a chef that's been living in New York City for the last 20 years, but I grew up here in the Catskills. And so I've decided to take my cooking and my catering and my offerings back upstate and try to work more directly with farmers and use better quality food, fresher food. Every week I'm here and I'll be offering a menu that's pretty cohesive, an appetizer, an entree, a side, and it's going to be from a different part of the world every week. So Turkish food, Central Chinese food, and it really depends what's peak season, but every week it'll be a different and new offering. One item will be a protein, and then we will have two sides that are vegetarian and or vegan. So there's always going to be something for everyone. The majority of the ingredients in each dish are being sourced from different vendors here. I think it's a nice way to sort of support each other. It's also a nice way to make sure that people know that they're getting really good quality food and point of view and a purpose for cooking and not just random ingredients from wherever. But, you know, I'm using Willow Wisps vegetables. I'm using Two Creek Farms proteins. And right in front of me, there's a gentleman who sells mushrooms, which is really exciting because I love to cook with those. It's really going to be peak season, and every week it'll be just something new, and hopefully if it's cuisine that people are unfamiliar with, and maybe hopefully they'll be willing to try it, it'll be delicious. If it's unfamiliar, either way, it will be delicious. So it's kind of a fun way to explore new. And this is my first farmer's market, but I'm excited to be here.
Moving along down the aisle at the marketplace is Lordville Farms, I think it's
Jordan, yeah.
So say hello.
Hi, everyone. So Narrowsburg Farmers Market, this will be our fifth year here. We're adding four different mushroom species to our list of fresh mushrooms. So we'll have 12 species this year. And also we're doing value-added products like mushroom salts, as well as dehydrated varieties as well.
What are the new varieties that you have, and what is your favorite mushroom that you sell?
Great question. Some beech, enoki, black trumpet, and king trumpets. And my favorite mushroom is the Italian oyster. It is year in, year out, just the best mushroom we have. Rain or shine, Rosie, you know I'll be here.
Like the mushrooms.
Oh, thank you. It was great seeing you.
Two Creek Farm. Before I get my eggs, I would like to say hello for the new season.
Hello, Rosie. Wonderful to see you. Welcome back to Narrowsburg Farmers Market.
Yes. There's somebody new in your stand that I'd like to say hello to and get to know her.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Chloe. I'm Brent's daughter, and this summer I'm working at the farm part-time.
Tell me what your role is.
Last season I did a full apprenticeship with the farm, and that just entailed me building fences and helping out in the garden and dealing like with all the animals. This year I'm more of a part-time position, so I'm still doing all those things but less days a week.
Okay, well, there's new exciting things at this farm stand.
Yes.
Tell us about how you're doing. What's your exciting news about this Narrowsburg farm stand? What's your favorite thing here?
I'm definitely a fan of all of our pork products. We have forested pork, and you can definitely tell the difference in terms of like when you're actually eating it. I love our pork chops, but if you're looking for something vegetarian, we also have great honey and eggs, yeah.
Oh, I know about your eggs. What is your favorite thing at this table?
Right now? I would probably dig into the radishes. I really do. Like, when I'm in the garden, I'll just pull them out of the ground and eat them straight. So it's really good. Yeah. Thank you.
Have a good learning experience.
Thank you.
Hi. Esteban from Roger That.
You're here at the Narrowsburg Market. This is the first year I've noticed that you're here. How's it going?
Lots of regular customers that I'm seeing, lots of new customers as well. So,
tell us about the varieties of bread that you're offering and what's your favorite one?
Yeah, so right now, my favorite bread, I would say, is the toasted sesame, like 60% whole wheat bread that I make. I pre-toast the sesame seeds and then I incorporate that into the dough. And the sesame seeds are like an heirloom variety called Bene. And the flavor from that sourdough bread is just something super, super unique. At the market, I'm also offering Pullman loaves and rustic shapes, either batard or boules. And I have a country recipe, which leans more white. And then that 60% whole wheat bread that I make, just to kind of give a variety of different flavor profiles. But everything here is sourdough based.
What is it that you do with your bread that makes it so popular?
Any of the whole grain flour that I incorporate in the dough is milled in-house. So I do a whole grain rye. The rye flour for that gets milled right before I mix it into water. So it's as fresh of flour as possible. That is kind of a key ingredient to this whole process, is having fresh flour, either whole grains that I mill in-house or getting it fresh locally. All the flour is sourced locally, either New York or Pennsylvania based. Sourdough just imparts a super unique flavor profile to the breads that's just almost impossible to resist. It's a very natural bread that's been made forever and has sustained humans for a while now. So it's part of our evolution in many ways. You know, using organic ingredients, organic flours, is super critical to how you feel eating the bread after. The flours aren't contaminated with pesticides, and so people just generally feel better after eating it. So it not only tastes great, you also feel great.
I have to agree with that. I am so picky and fussy about bread. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
More information is available on their website, narrowsburgfarmersmarket.org. For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr.
And thank you so much, Rosie, for that report. We're going to be hearing more from Rosie. She has been visiting farmers markets across the region, including in Calicoon and Holly, Pennsylvania. So definitely keep your ears open for that. And that's all for this week's show. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Stick around. Up next, it's Cats Cast with Brett Berry. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and PR. We'll catch you next week.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
With Morning Edition from NPR News, you don't have to wonder where your information is coming from, because we tell you. Get your news straight from the source every weekday.
weekday mornings starting at 5 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville.